Welcome to Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman, serial entrepreneur, author, and podcast host. Whether success for you is more money, time with your family, a healthy, well-balanced life, or freedom, I'm interviewing guests and getting you the advice to make it happen. So join me as we uncomplicate the complicated, help you define success, and give you the strategies to make it happen. Hello, and thank you for joining me today on the Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman. Joining me today is Susan Brown. Susan is a successful author, inspirational speaker, and legacy transformational mentor. Thank you for joining us today, Susan.
Thanks for having me, and thank you for what you do for your audience and serving all these people so beautifully on this amazing quest. So thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, tell me, so what does success mean to you?
Okay, well, I'll tell you a quick caveat. First, I think success appears to be a lot of things to everybody over the course of our lives, right? It can appear to be weight loss and you achieve that goal. It can appear to be the first $1 million and you achieve that. It can appear to be, you know, the great marriage, the well-behaved kids, the great home. But usually what happens is in the minute after that thing. And then there's that moment where you're like, huh, it's not necessarily a letdown, but it's like a realization, what just happened? This wasn't what I thought it was going to be, that it was going to be this awful feeling. Oh, yes, I've hit it. And I think part of that is good because we are meant to be like growing and being malleable and, you know, learning our whole lives. So if we ever were to be like achieve it all, then it would kind of be like an end game, right? But part of it is because our vision is off. And what I mean by that is there's this really cool story in the Bible, and I'm going to probably misquote, so I'll just get the reference, but it's from 2 Kings 6. But basically it's like Elisha is in this town, and like this whole town is surrounded with like all these people that are about to like kill them. The whole town is surrounded, right? And in verse 17, Elisha prays, he says, the people are like, we can't do anything. They're going to kill us all. Like, this is it. We're done for. And he says, Lord, open their eyes that they might see. And God opens their eyes and they're able to see in the mountains all around them is chariots and horses all on their side, like ready to come in. But they couldn't see it because it was like in this other realm, right? So what I've learned over the course of my 5 decades here on this earth, as I just celebrated 50 years young, is...
Congratulations.
Thank you. Is true success can't be dependent on circumstances. And as much as we don't like to think it, money, marriages, weight loss, all of those really are external circumstances, because at any time those could change or be taken away from us. And even beautiful gifts like just waking up, just breathing, just the ability for me to move my arm, for you to move your mouth, those are all successes. But again, we don't control those. So the thing that I believe true success is that we actually do have control over is true peace of mind, regardless of circumstances, whether there's money in the bank or not, whether your spouse left you or is fighting or not. True peace of mind is something that is just like the pinnacle of success. And it also enables you to be able to be content and yet not complacent in whatever good things are going on. It's like, yay, I'm grateful for this. Ooh, what can I do more? But it's not out of a striving, it's out of a gratitude place.
Yeah. Can you give some examples of that? I mean, because that's certainly a great concept, but you know, when you're struggling financially or you're hit with hardships, things aren't going well, how do you stay in a place of gratitude?
Yeah. So that's the interesting thing, right? Is like, it can be this one thing, but then the how to get there is a separate thing. So for me, the how to all had to start with Jesus, because my life before I met him was like a total train wreck. And it's not that things are all of a sudden glorious and unicorns are flying. It doesn't work like that. Things are still hard, but you have the mentor, you have the place to land, you have the one who's going to be with you through it all. So for me, when I was homeless, living in my car, somebody might have looked at me back then, looking in my car like, wow, well, she's not successful or she's kind of a waste, right? But what they didn't know is that that was where really everything began for me. And I tell people that was literally probably the best thing that ever happened to me. Because when I was living in my car, it basically was a reckoning. It was like, Okay, Susan, you have to choose. Like, what are you going to do with your life? What is it that you're going to pursue? And what is worthwhile of pursuing? What are you willing to just sacrifice it all for? Because nothing's left. Where are you going to go from here? So, with that, that's really where Jesus met me. And so I gave up, it was cold turkey. I gave up my partying lifestyle, my bartender job, all the things. And I was like, okay, I'm going to do whatever I have to do. And initially, my mission was to get a home, clearly, right? So the way you do this is there's an actual structure is I had to first get in gratitude because when, if you are only thankful when there's money in the bank, then actually, this is going to ruffle some feathers. You're not actually thankful. Because that's easy, right? I mean, I can be thankful when my husband is like, you know, I mean, by the way, he's the, like the most amazing person in the world. So, but you know, when he's impatient beyond belief, because coming on 23 years, but you know, if he and I are in a good place, then it's easy for me to go around and be like, oh, I'm so grateful. I have this great marriage, right? But rewind 21 years ago, he and I were going through some serious marriage struggles. We didn't know if we would still be together. We didn't know how we would make it. And this really amazing thing happened where I kept looking at him and seeing all his faults and all these things he had done. All the focus was on these things, right, that I couldn't control. And all of a sudden, these like blinders were lifted off of my face, and all I could see was like, oh my gosh, all of a sudden, not as I didn't see him as my husband, but not in a negative way. I saw him as like a child of God, like somebody that was also a human, somebody that was also making mistakes, and somebody that was also hurting. So we really have a vision problem, I believe, not only in our country, but in our culture. And we've become so used to looking at what's right in front of us that we don't take a time the time to step back, especially in this emotionally charged world and culture we're living in, get out of our emotions, get out of ourselves. And some of that I'm thankful I've learned that from my time as a paramedic, you know, where you had to get unemotional and you had to be right there in the moment, focus, do the thing so that you could save that person, you could break down later. But we need to learn to take a step back and look at things with a separate view, a separate perspective of gratitude. So, going back to your question, when I was living in my car, I was like, okay. And I didn't come up with this process until, you know, much later, years later, realizing what got me from there to here. How can I do anything? God, I'm so, I don't have anything. I don't have anything. That was my focus, right? I don't have anything. I don't have anything. Well, then all of a sudden I was like, Susan, yes, you do. What are you living in? You have a car. And so all of a sudden I started getting excited. I'm like, oh my gosh, I have a car. Okay. Yeah, it's scary to fall asleep with mace in my hand and my ball cap. So hopefully I look like a guy and nobody messes with me. But I have a vehicle that I can use to get to interviews. I have a vehicle to stay out of the rain. I have a vehicle to drive away if I need to. I have a vehicle that I can change clothes in. I have a vehicle. So once I started getting grateful for what I had and my vision changed so I could see that. Then came the intention because nobody's going to do it for you. And I think that's another problem with this culture that has created this emotionally charged society is we think, well, I just, somebody else, they can just do it for me. Well, it doesn't work like that. You know, somebody was asking me recently, Susan, how can you do so much in a day? And I said, well, I think I just have never been in a place in my life where I didn't have a choice. I think, you know, I'm going to get that saying wrong, but I know you've heard it. It's something like, hard times build strong men or people. Strong men or people build like good. I'm gonna get it wrong, but you've heard it. But basically, it's like if things are easy for you, then you're gonna like actually fall off and you're not gonna be able to accomplish much. So I think when people have hard times, that can actually be as painful as this is to say the blessing, even though you don't realize it right now, your pain can be the thing that actually propels you to your purpose. And so, when we can change our vision and look at things that we can't see readily, like Elisha, maybe all of a sudden open our eyes and we see the possibilities, but you have to get in gratitude. You have to be intentional. And then you have to have a specific vision. So, for me, I would drive my car to this one furniture store. I was living down here at the beach, and they had this all glass front. And there was this beautiful four-poster bed sitting inside there. And so after it closed, I would drive up, I would park my car, and until I got really, really sleepy, I would stare at that bed. And as crazy as it sounds, it started to become not a bed I was looking at, But I would look at it and I would actually see myself inside the bed pulling the covers up. I would feel the warmth of the covers and I felt so safe. And that became my vision. I became obsessed with that, right? Because all these other shiny objects, what would they matter? And if I was still living in my car. And then came the E. So I don't know if you noticed this is spelling something, G-I-V-E, give. And that is the execution. And that's where a lot of people fall off, right? It's like it's easy to like, it can be easy to get in gratitude, to have the intention, to have the vision, but then you have to do the work. Then the rubber meets the road. Then you really have to just rise up, own it, and get in there and be willing to get dirty, be willing to be embarrassed and look shameful. Who cares? You're on a mission. So then comes the work. You have to execute it. And then I like to spell this out actually with the S because gives is better than give. And then the final step is you have to surround yourself with the people that you want to be like, the people that have maybe already been there or the people that you admire that you want to get there, and then surround and sow and then pay it forward and bring other people up with you. So I'm glad you asked because there is a process, but that's what I've used to be thankful when I was homeless living in my car, when I was actually dying on the floor from a miscarriage in front of my two young children, caregiving for my paralyzed mom. So I think the hardships are actually the blessing that does propel you to your purpose, because without that hardship, you don't really know what you're made of. And if you don't have the hardship, then you have the comfort that can kind of protect you from what you're capable of. You know, the hardship can be the thing that makes you reckon with yourself, like, okay, this is it. What am I going to do here? Like, what am I willing to do? What am I willing to give up? What am I willing to look shameful and silly for to get to that mission? And if you get to a place where you can actually have peace of mind during the hard times, yeah, that's true success.
Yeah. So if when you're talking, you found, I think, a piece with the simplicity in life as well, right? Yes. Knowing that you could survive with little,
yeah,
you know, and then kind of grow from there. I had a similar, I think, experience in my entrepreneurship journey when I first decided to leave the corporate world, and we had gotten our bills down pretty darn low. And, you know, we're not the type with fancy cars and fancy houses and boats and all that stuff. And so at the time, I remember thinking, I can be comfortable and have a good life with this. And now understanding that I can, you know, pursue what I want to do in life, the entrepreneurship journey, and not have the stress of like this huge financial burden over me was very uplifting. But there's a lot of people nowadays that are living, even though they're making plenty of money, they're living well above their means, they're stressing out, and they're constantly trying to get more material things. Why?
I do think I know why. And this is something that I think is a word that people confuse. I think they're not content. And people want to think that content is equal to complacency, but they're complete opposites, honestly. Complacency, I akin to more of a laziness, a slothfulness. It's like, whatever. But when you are like where you were saying, like when I was homeless and learning to have peace of mind, and because I also knew that that wasn't where I was going to stay, right? But I was still grateful for what I had. But I think the issue is that lack of contentedness, which is more akin to gratefulness, whereas the complacency is slothfulness. And I think that the people that you're referring to falsely believe, well, if I'm not striving, then I must be complacent, and I don't want to be complacent. So I think it's maybe a fear of complacency that can play in. But what they don't realize is that contentedness is not complacency. And I think that maybe there's a fear of contentedness because it's like, well, if I stay here, then I'm never striving. No, it's totally okay. Like, for me to be content living in my car did not mean I was complacent. I was doing something about it, right? Like, but until you're grateful for what you have, you actually won't be able to move forward because it's never going to be enough. There's always going to be another rung to climb, right? Even if you were the richest man in America, Philip, well, then you might need to be the richest man in the world. And then you might need to be the richest man that could, there's always going to be something, right? And I think the problem is when that comes in and wrecks our peace of mind, which actually steals your joy for the entire life that you're building, right? We're not building this so that someday when it's all built and all the pieces are in place, okay, then I'll be happy. Okay, then I'll start to, you know, take my wife out on dates. Okay, then I'll do this. But that's not why we're doing this, you know? And it is hard because as entrepreneurs, we have a lot of, every entrepreneur I've met, not a single one of them ever has just one idea, right? And it's because we love that. That's the thrill of it, right? Is, oh my goodness, and we could do this and this and this and this. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think sometimes we do let the complacency for our other parts of our life come in. We're like, well, that's okay. That marriage is okay. That's, but we have lost the contentedness for all the parts of our life. And when you're truly content and truly grateful for what you have, that doesn't mean you want to stay there. It just means you are appreciative. You are thankful. You are in awe for where you are. And I think sometimes we don't look backwards enough. You know, so many people say, oh, don't look in hindsight. Don't look in hindsight. But oh my goodness, how in the world would you not look in hindsight? It's so encouraging. You know, whether you're in hard times right now, if you can look back and see that you used to be in good times, you know, there's something to hope for. If you're in good times right now and you look back and you can see everything that God's brought you through. So I think we don't look backwards enough because we're so busy looking forward, striving, striving, striving. Oh my goodness. Look at where you are. Take a minute and congratulate yourself. You know, it's huge. It's amazing. And that's okay. If you haven't accomplished your goals yet, we should always have a heart for yearning and for growing. I tell my kids that I hope I'm learning until the day I die. You know, like I don't ever want to be at a place where, oh, I got this. I'm good. I don't need any more knowledge. Like how crazy would that be?
Absolutely. Especially with the world constantly changing and stuff like that. So I want to explore that a little bit more. So you've talked about the importance of self-reflection and self-awareness and personal and professional growth. Are there practices that you coach with your clients to make them kind of pointed on that, right? Because if it's not something, if it's not a behavior that you do, especially in the beginning, it kind of feel a little unnatural.
Yes, that's exactly what we do. And that actually stems a lot from, you know, most entrepreneurs, we create what we wish we had had, right? So growing up, I had, it was an interesting upbringing, I'll just say that. But my parents loved me, but it was a bit interesting because we would go to church. And then we would come home and things would be a little bit tense. It was very legalistic, very, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this. So I grew up very much in struggling with self-hatred, struggling with like, well, I don't have a place in this world. I'm not worthy and all this kind of stuff. Right. And so as we got older and my husband and I met, we started seeking out and I will take a caveat and say, I think too much too, people focus on bad things in their upbringing or bad relationships in marriage. And it is okay because we all have things like that. But what I will say about that as a little sidebar is that I think it's really important. This is actually my husband's genius, not mine. He told me this years ago, is he said, babe, I think that the bad examples are just as valid as the good ones. And it took me a minute and I had to process that. And he said, think about it. If we know clearly what we don't want to do, that's a huge win, right? But again, it's all in how you look at it. If we're busy like sulking in it versus saying, okay, I don't know how to do that. So what we started doing is we started seeking out, well, how are these people doing that with their kids? And we would ask them and they would kind of laugh and we would say, well, no, like what actually happens in your mind if you're kid yells at you and you didn't yell back and this didn't like, can you walk me through that? And they would kind of look at me and say, well, no. I'm like, okay. So we started seeking out processes, which is exactly what you're talking about, because it's one thing to say, be grateful. Well, that's not a natural state that we know how to do, right? So yes, I do have a system I take people through that gives them tangible, actual things to do. I still do to this day. We have lots of different processes. And I think that's the whole thing on getting unstuck, right? And it doesn't matter if it's like the weight loss or the money, if you have all the things you've ever wanted, because if you're miserable inside and you feel like you can't get there and there's that one thing and you have to have it, most likely other parts of your life aren't doing so well because you're so obsessed with this one thing. And so we try to get you back to that place where you can see, oh my goodness, this is amazing. And you re-spark that joy for life, because that's what peace of mind does as well, is it reignites that hope and excitement for life that we've kind of lost. You know, we can get so busy in the busyness of it that it's like, and I mean, myself included, my kids will walk in and be like, Mom, why do you look mad? I'm like, I'm not. They're like, you're like this. I'm like, oh, that must be my concentrating face when I'm writing or typing, you know? So one of the things we do tell people, and it's a bit countercultural, I'm not sure if, psychiatrists would like this or not, but it works for us, is comes into play with that, is we actually tell people, so, and it feels really goofy when you start it, okay, but if you're concentrating or washing dishes, is to like force a smile, make yourself smile. Sure. Because there's an actual, and you probably know this because I know you're all about the mindset stuff too, is there's actually physiological proof, because when you smile, it actually sends a different signal to your brain and it lightens things up a bit. And so you start to see a little bit differently. And the things that are so heavy or felt so heavy, you start to have a little bit more of a perspective on. That actually worked too when I was a paramedic. If we had something really heavy going on, and my partner would tap me and smile, and it was kind of a re-perspective focus, so that I could be in that moment and do the best care. So intentional smiling feels really goofy when you start it. You know, people look at you like, why? You know, but it works. And that's one way. We also have a whole system of how to get you from here to here without the shiny object syndrome. And that I just discovered this year was super exciting. It's been super beneficial. But one tip I will give you that I share with our clients that's really a help. And again, especially in this world, in this culture that this emotionally charged, everybody's opinion is truth and right culture we're kind of living in, is there's so much information coming at us, you know, and especially with entrepreneurs, you know, there's always a new social media app or a new this thing, or you should do this, or you should do this, and you could reach more people and more people and more sales and more sales. Is we have to start thinking like the CEO of our life and not a consumer. And that, again, sounds simplistic, but as you know, usually the higher up we get and the more we pay for other coaches to mentor us, it is the simple things that reground us. And we're like, oh yeah. And I kind of think of it as those aha moments, those things we knew deep in our soul, but we just needed somebody to remind us and kind of waken that up and be like, oh yeah, I knew that, you know? And that doesn't mean it was like a waste of an investment when you find that out from your coaches. It means it was a worthy one, you know? So when I get on social media, you know, I tell all my friends, I mean, real life, I'm like, listen, please don't get upset if I don't see your comment. I legitimately get on there, I post my things, and I get off. So I encourage the entrepreneurs, you know, don't be a consumer on social media. You get on there, you do your thing, or have your VA or whoever does it. And it's good to like reply and be in the messages and stuff, but it can be a bit of a comparison game and shiny object and really detract you from what you need to be doing in your mission that you've been called for your business and your life, because comparison is like the thief of all joy. I'm telling you, it's a joy killer.
Yeah.
And social media is good at doing that.
Yeah. Be deliberate when you're on social media, I think is the point of that. I recently we were, using social media for this horse farm. So I had to put Facebook app back on my phone and started using it again. And I started getting like some kind of depression a little bit from it, you know? And then I realized that I was just spending time back on it. And I've talked about this before, how I try to be deliberate with my time. I only sit down for a certain time to do it. And I was being sucked back into it. And I realized that there's such a heavy addiction with it, and I don't feel like it's good for my mental health.
No, I am a person who actually loathes social media. And about 5 years ago, Philip, I quit it altogether, or maybe it's more like 7 years. And I'll tell you why I quit it. And this is a super embarrassing story. Maybe somebody can relate. Well, we were homeschooling our kids, and it was when we lived here in Alabama before, and they were little bitty. And I was giving them like a quiz. And as they're asking me questions, I'm on my phone. I'm like, uh-huh. And And then here's the embarrassing part. I would take my phone with me to the toilet. And as I'm on the toilet, I'm scrolling social media. What is wrong with this picture?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And so, and I was like the person always coming in everybody's stuff, always sharing all the things, blah, 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 right? And I finally just, I had to stop. And I was already struggling with depression because of a lot of other things, circumstances that had gone on. And I stopped at cold turkey. I put like one post. I said, hey, for any of you that know me in real life, or even those of you don't, you know, feel free to shoot me a message. I'm going to shut this down in 3 days. I'll be happy to text you my number. You know, we can call, we can text, whatever. And of course, there's all the typical, you know, oh, we don't want to see you go. Oh, you post such. And I said, listen, I got to get out of here.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I did. And I was off of it for like 5 years. And here's the cool thing. I never missed it. Like now there is the withdrawals, right? Like that part is real. It's kind of like smoking or something, right? It's kind of like you, oh, and you think, oh, am I, what am I missing? And so last year, was it, or a year and a half ago, I had my business coach at the time say, Susan, you're going to have to get back on social media for your business. I was like, oh, I'd rather have my toenails pulled out without anesthesia. And she was like, well, but you just need to do it. I said, well, I've been doing things successfully without social media. You know, I said, I like the, in the real person, you know, hugging people, doing conferences, talking to people, sitting down with them. And she's like, yeah, but you can have a bigger reach. And I was like, okay. I mean, I rolled my eyes so hard. I can't believe that I didn't get stuck back there. But even when I get on there now, just to post, I mean, you know, you're, it is very depression inducing. And, you know, they've proven with the blue light that just like how we've proven now that sugar is as addictive as crack cocaine, that the blue light of our phones and the way that the social media grabs you in certain things is becoming the next sugar, the next crack cocaine. It's meant to do that. And it's detracting us. It makes me think of all those futuristic movies way back in the day, the Arnold Schwarzenegger ones that now we're like, oh my gosh, you know, how they were like, oh, people are going to be like in their cocoons or something. And their like avatar will go out there. But I think of that like with social media, you know, it's like, even though you and I don't live in the same town or even the same state, like I'm like, Philip, I would totally get together with you and have a cup of coffee, you know, bring the kids over, help them clean horses or whatever. Like, yeah. I think that human connection, a really, people need the real, you know, they need this real connection, the audio visual, the in-person. And there's so much I could put up on social media, who would even know if it was true or what you put up or whatever, you know. And I think it's very, I don't, my kids don't have social media, they're not allowed on it, I don't allow them on it, I'm just, I don't see the point, especially they're both girls. And so I mean, even gentlemen know, you're married, so you have a wife. Women are already in the comparison game even before social media was created. You know, it's always like, oh, are you blonde enough or thin enough or this enough or that enough? And so my greatest thrill in life is lifting others up towards the greatest they were designed for. That's like my biggest thrill. And yeah, social media is just a killer of that, I think, or can be. So definitely think like the CEO when you're on there, but also in your life, it helps you become just a better human in general. If you start to think like the CEO of your life instead of the consumer, and you are going to be more, you're going to be a happier person, a more joyful person, a more content person.
Absolutely. So, I couldn't agree with you more on that. Be intentional with your actions, including things like social media and stuff, and don't let it become an addiction. Well, Susan, I want to thank you so much for your time today. For our listeners listening out there, how do they keep in touch with you? What do you have going on?
Oh, yeah. Well, come check me out at SusanBrownCoaching.com or at LegacyGameChangers.com. Right now they go to the same site. We'll be revamping a little bit soon. And we're relaunching my book, 1 Year of Thankful Thursdays. So if you have, you know, anybody that needs a speaker at their event, be happy to come see. We have a new book on the horizon. But yeah, and be sure y'all tune into all of Philip's episodes, give him all the support, because he's an amazing human being. He's on this massive quest to encourage people and find out success. So you can also check out livefreenowprogram.com, and that's our initial program in. So thank you for having me, Philip.
Absolutely. And thank you so much, Susan. Thank you to our audience for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.